So just before I turned the record button on, I was giggling because I am amazed at the audiograms that my production team picks out of the conversation. And I was listening to the conversation with John Knotts. And again, he made me laugh because he said something so profound that goes against the status quo. And so I always question, I ask why. That's why I irritated teachers throughout my high school and college career. Because if I didn't understand something, I would ask why. But then a wise leader then challenges what is. And should it be that way? Or should it be the contrary of what we've been told? And again, we respect science. We respect authority and expertise. But we as humans have the right to not go with the flow, but question the status quo. And John Knotts brings up a really great topic about silos. And we hear about silos in business, and over time we think silos are bad, but they exist for a reason. We need expertise. And if you get to the root cause and ask why have silos evolved to being bad, it could be the root of it is we've forgotten how to communicate between the silos and give each other what we need in order to be successful. So I ask you again, don't go with the flow. Always question the status quo. And while it may not be popular at first, and you will get people who are naysayers and say, be quiet and just get with the program, your true leadership will come through when you question the status quo. Let's listen to this great interview with John Knotts.
Stop tearing down the silos. I hate it when I hear, oh, we're reorganizing. Why? Because we're trying to change things up around here. We're trying to solve a problem. Silos are created in organizations for a reason. If you do not recognize these silos as they exist, what is a silo? HR. That's a silo. Why do we have an HR department as we grow our business? Because we need functionality and expertise in HR. So you're going to tear that down? Why? Because what's happening is something's going on in there. And that's what I call organizational myopia, organizational short-sightedness. The silos get bad. And then what happens is that things start to break down. We start with one, if a leader doesn't understand why silos exist and why they're important to their organization, then they will tear them down. It's a knee-jerk reaction. I'm just going to move some people around.
Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals.
Hello, I am Deb Coviello, founder of Illumination Partners, and I just want to thank you for joining me and my guests on another episode of the Drop-In CEO podcast. Week after week, I get to speak to amazing leaders and gain insights and inspiration from them, and I hope you do as well. So if you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to bring you great programming. And this week, my special guest is John Knotts. He is a coach and consultant with over 30 years of experience in military, nonprofit, and commercial leadership coaching and consulting. Extensive background in strategy, change, process, leadership, management are amongst many of his technical areas of expertise, and also a 21-year Air Force veteran, a former consultant with Booz Allen Hamilton, and was a strategic business advisor with Fortune 100 companies. So I can't wait to share his experience. He has extensive knowledge in operations and senior leadership. He is an amazing thought leader. I simply want to welcome you onto the show, John.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
the power of the network, getting introduced to you. I am grateful to know you. And for our listeners, you know, John fulfills, he's got all of this operations experience. He has fractional roles as chief operating officers, et cetera. He has seen so many companies and he has this sense of what is missing often. And we come in, like myself, drop into organizations and help get them on the right track, whatever the business issue is. Often they may not even have a well-defined strategy. So I am uniquely interested in some of John's perspectives and you maybe as well. So John, please share with us a little bit about yourself personally, your journey, as well as the work that you're doing now to serve customers.
Awesome. Well, I started in the quality world back in 1990 in the Air Force in the TQM era, and it was called the Quality Air Force Program. And I actually was a cop in the Air Force. And the cops in the Air Force, they do a lot of crazy things and they're always trying to do things better than everybody else. So of course, this quality program, we were going to do better than anybody else. So I got really involved in quality Air Force and I loved it. In 98, I had an opportunity to retrain into a career field called manpower and quality. They needed to staff up to be able to do these things called competitive sourcing and privatization studies. And they wanted an additional 500 people in the career field. So I took the opportunity and retrained and basically became an internal industrial engineer, a coach and consultant to senior leaders, strategic planner and process improvement practitioner. So 11 years later, I retired with 21 years in service from the Air Force. I did a lot of different jobs and I went to go work for Booz Allen. Did that for 3 years. It was definitely a learning opportunity for me. They teach a lot. And then I went to go work in USAA, United Services Automobile Association in San Antonio, Texas, and worked on over 7 years. I worked on 4 strategic engagements. One of them was to re-engineer their entire process improvement program, which was really exciting. And I work for myself now, and I also support Gemba Academy, which you may have heard of.
Yes.
So I work with Steve Kane and Ron Pereira, and I'm doing coaching for their green belt and black belt, and eventually their master black belt and their lean practitioner program. And I'm helping them improve the programs overall. So really exciting. And I enjoy doing that. I love coaching. One of the things I know you didn't say in my introduction, which is kind of odd, is that I own a horse farm. My wife and I bought a horse farm 5 years ago. It was a piece of property with a barn on it. And we opened up a horse farm and we breed horses, we board horses, and we train both riders and horses in English and Western riding disciplines. And there's a lot of people will tell me that you can't do what you do here. And I'll tell you that we apply lean process improvement techniques here all the time. We're constantly looking for ways to improve the way we do things. So I don't believe that it can't be done wherever you are. You're not unique because I can do it at a horse farm.
That is so amazing. And you know, I knew about the horse farm. You've got beautiful pictures behind you. Again, I can see John right now as we conduct this interview. I wanted you to share the story, but really the story is, how did you get into this? Again, you bought the farm, but how did you get into that? I'm curious.
Well, my wife has been into horses since she was 7, and she's always wanted to have her own horse farm. We had our horses at a barn, and the lady got sick with cancer. It was her 3rd remission of cancer, or you know, whatever they call it, instance of cancer. And we went to the uncle, and we offered to buy the property, and he was amenable to it. And we came back with a price that was it was appraised at, and he wanted like double that, and we just couldn't afford it. So the deal fell through, and a week later, she ended up in hospice and passed away like 2 days later. And he came on the property. He was from California, and we're here in Texas. And he came for the funeral and everything, and told everybody, there were like 40 horses on property. Said, you need to get all your horses off of the property in 30 days. I'm selling it. And of course, you know, what are all these people doing? So we looked, and it took us more than 30 days, but we eventually found a 100-acre piece of property that had a barn. They had had some horse operations on it before. the Polo Club, the San Antonio Polo Club, was actually operating out of here as a nonprofit at the time, and they had just left. And that's how we ended up here. And it wasn't in my plan. I can tell you this, it wasn't in my plan, and I'm big about planning. But what I did realize is that it does fit, because we're running a true operation business. We have 12 employees. There's 34 horses. I have capacity for 40 on property. We were over capacity during COVID. And if you want to talk about trying to run a difficult organization, deal with basically the health and care of 40, you know, 35 to 40 horses on your property. You're responsible for what's going to happen to them. So that's a big deal.
I can so relate to that. I mean, I also have worked in the flavors industry. And so we are entrusted with not only the quality of the product we deliver, but the safety to human consumption. And so talk about the burden of that responsibility on your shoulders, because one mistake, bad things happen.
Yes. And I can't say that we haven't had accidents out here, but we are very safe. And we make sure we take care of the horses really well. But it's very interesting to deal with horses. You're dealing with people, keeping them in inherently a dangerous sport. So, you know, horses kick, they can step on you, they can bolt, they can rear up, or they can buck. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're not paying attention, you can get hurt. And so all of our instructors here, and you know, just everything about the property, is focus on the safety of the horse and the individual first. We want to be better than everybody around us. We don't necessarily see the other barns as competition, because we will send people to other barns if it's more appropriate. You know, somebody don't want to drive 30, 40, 50 minutes just to come and see a horse or take a lesson. There are a lot of different horse properties around here that we know, and we'll recommend them. But we want to make sure that our level of care and the way that we treat things and what we offer is just better than everybody else.
So what I love about this is that you, as you said, you truly have an operations. Most operations leaders have to focus on safety first, the people within the operations, then the community, and then ultimately the consumer or the end user of the products that you do. So you have living proof. And I will say, I will agree with you on a particular point. You talk about everything that you do is lean, or you have continuous improvement. Even myself in my business, I have standards for when I do certain things. I have a strategic plan. I've got automation that can error-proof some of my processes to allow for scalability. So, you know, we can take life lessons, our hobbies, our volunteer activities, our side gigs, and translate that into anything. These are, if you treat it seriously and you want the best quality and service, treat it like a business.
Absolutely.
And it is a business, but wow. I knew you had all this background. And so again, you know, I know John, I did not realize the extent you were in the Air Force. So shout out to my husband, Dan. He too was in the Air Force. He was a cop and also responsible for the quality and training of others in the security police area. So we got a little bit more connection here. And obviously I'm a continuous improvement professional. I do Lean and Six Sigma. I teach it, et cetera. I've been in the thick of heavy problem solving with major customer issues. It's hard work, but when done right, either proactively to try to avoid issues, or when you have to roll up your sleeves and make a customer right, it's also the important work that we do as continuous improvement and operations professionals.
Yeah.
So I would really love to dig into really why I wanted to have you on here. So I sincerely appreciate your thought leadership, the content that you put out there. But I'm going to start with this question first, because I look at so many amazing leaders. I've been in some major corporations and they lead well. They're great leaders. They steer the ship. They have great strategies. But one of the things that I noticed was that they're not often putting themselves out there as a thought leader. And I don't know if they even think about it, and should they? What are your thoughts about that?
When I think about thought leadership, there's a lot of different ways that you can make that happen. You can get very active if you're in a specific industry. You can get very active in the industry associations, and you can offer to speak and to share your information. There are podcasts for everything out there, and getting yourself out on podcasts, just like what we're doing right here, is a way of sharing your knowledge, sharing your information. The big thing about thought leadership is that it's all about the law of reciprocity. The law of reciprocity is that you give more than you get. You're not doing this so that you can get something from somebody else. Because when you think like that, what happens is if you don't get something as a result, then you stop doing what you're doing. You stop giving. And that's something that a leader needs to really think about is like, what's their purpose here? Are they giving or are they trying to get something out of it? And when they really, truly give, everybody recognizes it. And that comes from an abundance mindset. People with a scarcity mindset, they're not going to give away stuff. Oh, I can't tell you everything that we do. I can't share with you everything you do. I'll tell you anything you want to know. I'll tell you exactly how to do something. Most of the time, I realize that you may try to do it yourself. It's going to be really difficult because you don't have anybody to guide you who's done it 15, 20, 100, whatever times. But I will teach. I will share. And that's what a thought leader should be doing. Because the more that they're exploring what they know, the better they are at it. And there are other things that you can do, writing articles for magazines. I specifically write for Forbes. I have over 100 publications now in a 2.5 year period with Forbes. I love writing for them. As a matter of fact, I'll probably have one dropping on Monday or Tuesday of next week. So looking forward to that. I write every day on LinkedIn. I post every day on LinkedIn. Now, one of the reasons why you don't see like a CEO or a COO, these really top level executives posting out on there is because what happens, it's like throwing chum in the water. Once they see a CEO talking on social media, all of the people that want to do business with that person just like attack and they just start trying to communicate, maybe pitch. And so a lot of times and I know many CEOs that I've worked with as a fractional COO, they'll be very active on social media reading, but they're not liking, they're not commenting, and they're not posting because they know once they do that, they're going to get hit with all those people because they see that they're active. And they don't want that.
It's such a missed opportunity. But I will tell you, I have had on my show some CEOs or senior leaders of organizations had no social media presence. Those are my number 1, 2, 3 and downloads because, ooh, as soon as they show up with their ideas, everybody wants to hear them.
Yes.
Whether it's inside the organization or outside of the organization, talk about building credibility, brand, et cetera, respect and followers, and then other people that you can coach and mentor, et cetera. There's such value in sharing what you think, not regurgitating what others say.
Yeah, and you turn everything that you do, whether it's writing, speaking, podcasts, posting, everything you do, it turns into material that you can then continually share. You can repost that stuff on your own business website and just share it out there. There's a company called In the Ditch, and Gemba Academy has gone and interviewed them, and they are huge into process improvement. If you go to their website, they have all kinds of videos that talk about the process improvement activities that they're doing. They're constantly sharing what they're doing with other, even their competitors. They don't care because they know they're good. They're not worried about anybody else. And that's, I think that is what really sets people apart is when you can do that and you're confident and you're not worried about, oh, somebody's going to steal my stuff.
That's so valid. It's an interview I had the other day. So I am in the flavors and fragrance industry, at least the last 20 years. So people know I've been in electronics, telecom, et cetera. I've even been in a tannery for about 6 months. But anyway, I have interviewed one particular flavor leader and pictures of their factory are all over LinkedIn. Again, a little bit scrubbed just so you don't see some of the proprietaries, but they're showing their operations. I go to some of the other big multinational in the same industry. Nothing. You just get the marketing decks and here's our latest flavor and product. And we're into sustainability, but nothing about the inner works. And I was taken aback. And they said, we got nothing to hide. We use it as part of our brand messaging. We show people we want to hire. They get to see already. They get to know us before they even set foot in the place. Talk about a different mindset to your point, the abundance mindset of a leader that just wants to share and show in order to build.
Yeah, you think about in an industry, when you do something like that, you become a leader in the industry because nobody else is doing that. They're all scared. So when you step up and say, you know what, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to share what I know. I'm going to create discussion, because discussion, I might even create some angst in there just so that I can get people to challenge my assumptions, what I'm saying, because that creates more learning for everybody. And if you can start to get everybody to communicate on subjects that are aligned to what you do and to your business, then you will be the thought leader. They will see you as that.
And the differentiator.
Yeah.
Yeah. The medium-sized company, as soon as they put their thought leadership, you're going to be more top of mind because you think differently. You're not just a commodity. So there is something different about that company over there because of the leadership putting themselves forward. Wow. Amazing insight. You know, I'd like to just transition this a little bit. You have so much expertise. You have, overcoming organizational myopia, your book, amazing resource. But there's some topics in there that are really interesting to me because I too go into organizations and they may have been mom and pop shops, survived for so long, they don't know how to do strategy. So sometimes you or I go in and help organizations to put the strategies in place to set them up for long-term success. But you talk about often that 70% of strategies fail. And why is that?
Yeah. So this is kind of a metric that goes across a lot of things that we deal with. Process improvement, change management. You know, it's like 70% of these efforts, only, you know, like 70% of employees are not engaged. It's like this crazy statistic that is out there, but it's been proven over and over again. In the case of strategic plans, the first problem that occurs is that the organization doesn't have a plan. So 9 times out of 10, you're going to find a business doesn't have a plan. They may say they have a strategy, but that strategy is in their head. You know, I always ask, do you have a strategic plan? Oh, yeah, I have a strategic plan. Let me see it. Because if your strategic plan doesn't say that you should be working with somebody like me as a strategic coach and consultant, then why are we doing that? Your strategy should dictate your actions. And often what happens is they're like, I have to find that. I'm not really sure where it is. It's on my computer somewhere. And a couple of weeks might go by and finally it's like, I can't find it. Or they rebuild the strategy as quickly as is best because they don't want to admit that they don't really have a strategy. Sometimes they say, oh yeah, I have a strategy. It's all up in my head. But that means the minute something happens, your strategy is going to change because it's not written down. So this is where the first struggles are with strategy, that it doesn't really even exist. But then there's the strategies that are built. And those are the ones where you've spent the time and they still fail. And I think that's really what they were measuring back in 1990 when they did this study. And they were measuring strategies that were actually created and 70% of them were failing. So you think about that. If only 1 out of 10 actually have a strategy, and now like 3 out of 10 that have a strategy actually are succeeding. Why is that? And I think it really boils down to 5 things. First off, is that your strategy is not built to overcome the barriers that are preventing it from achieving what it's trying to achieve. What's happening is you're not doing an organizational assessment or an environmental scan or pre-planning analysis or whatever tool you want to call it or approach you want to call it, you're not actually looking at what's going on in the organization. You're just coming into a conference room with a bunch of leaders around there and saying, okay, what are we going to work on? And everybody goes, well, I'm doing this. Okay, that'll be your strategy. And I'm doing this and that'll be your strategy. That's not a strategic plan. And that means that all of the employees know that it was built in a conference room. It was built in a closet. It wasn't built off of what really is happening in the organization. So if you don't do an organizational assessment and understand where you are and what is standing in front of you, then you'll never have a really good strategy in place. A lot of strategies don't have the good elements that you need to have in place. So that is a mission, a purpose, visions, and value. Okay. If you don't establish those and they're really good, then your plan will struggle. I've seen many strategies that are written where the mission statement and the vision statement look like they could have been written as the same at this exact same time because they say the same thing. And a lot of times the vision is already, you've already achieved it. We want to be this. Well, aren't you already? Well, yeah, but we want to continue to be it. And I'm like, no, that's not what a vision's all about. So when they create really good structure for the plan, then you can actually create implementation. So now you create traceable implementation to achieve the vision. I have an organizational assessment says where I am, and now I have a gap to where I want to go. And that's, we do gap analysis every day. You get out of bed and you're like, okay, well, I've got to eat breakfast and I got to get to work. I've got to, you know, get dressed and I got to take a shower and I got to drive somewhere. We're all doing gap analysis in our head. So do gap analysis from where you are today in your organizational assessment to where you're trying to go in your vision and create that plan. And now it's traceable. It's measurable. So that's traceable implementation. And one of the biggest things is that we create a strategy and then the leaders don't make, they don't hold people accountable to it. They don't fund it. So when you don't do those two things, the strategy is not going to go anywhere. It's basically ignored. It's like, I want to do all this stuff, but I'm not going to put the money towards it. I'm not going to hold people accountable to get it done. So I ask that question. Okay, what have people done? Well, they haven't done anything. Well, what have you done about that? Nothing. We're too busy doing other stuff. Well, and it's not important to you. And the last thing is communication. From the very moment that you start strategic planning activities, which basically should be from the moment that you start your company, you are constantly communicating what you are doing. We're doing strategic planning. This is the strategic plan we created. Here's our mission. Here's our vision. This is what it means to us. Here's our values. This is how we're changing our organization. And as we go, and every time that you reiterate and look at that every year, every quarter, whatever, that you are communicating constantly what's happening, because otherwise nobody knows and it's all in a vacuum. So those are the reasons why strategies fail. And it's a lot of work. A lot of people are like, well, I don't want to do all that work. I just want to do the business. And then they wonder why they're failing, why their business is collapsing around them.
Because they're not disciplined.
Right.
You have to put some leader standard work is responsible for setting the course of the organization. And like you say, the leading and lagging indicators to monitor performance that goes to our plan, do, check, act, quality methodology. How do you know that the business is moving forward to where you need to go? You have time to put out the fires, but you don't have time to invest in the future of your business. These are all great questions and they scratch their head. Another thing, if I could add, because I do talk about this in the CEO's Compass, we may even have a great consultant that comes in and helps the leadership team craft that strategy, et cetera. But we also then do a disservice if you have another layer of leadership under you. Yes, you may communicate the strategy, but do we also teach the next level to take that strategy that you crafted and maybe you copy paste to the next level down, but then teaching the next level of leaders how to do the same thing, edit as appropriate for your organization? Do you want to add some additional values? What are the enablers? What are the barriers for you to achieve the strategy as it pertains to your function? We do a disservice because we don't mentor and coach and instill those necessary skills to build the next leaders. And then we have to start all over again.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's true. And at that, you know, that falls to kind of like a Hoshin planning, you know, mindset, as where you're just deploying it and you're rolling it down. So this is the big thing, is when the person at the very front line can look at what they do every day and line that all the way back up and say, this is how I am moving the needle on the strategy. That is super powerful.
It is. You have so much I want to go over. I want to just steer you into one others, because I think this is an enabler or a barrier for successful strategic execution. You talk about having companies overcoming that silo mentality. You may have the best strategy. Everybody, you know, high fives. Yep, we're committed to doing this. We got our KPIs. We'll cascade it to the rank and file. But I see the silos, as you talk about, maybe could inhibit it. So what can businesses do to overcome the silo mentality that may still exist in the organization?
So I'm going to say something that a lot of your listeners aren't going to agree with. Stop tearing down the silos. I hate it when I hear, oh, we're reorganizing. Why? Because we're trying to change things up around here. We're trying to solve a problem. Silos are created in organizations for a reason. If you do not recognize these silos as they exist, what is a silo? HR. That's a silo. Why do we have an HR department as we grow our business? Because we need functionality and expertise in HR. So you're going to tear that down? Why? Because what's happening is something's going on in there. And that's what I call organizational myopia, organizational short-sightedness. The silos get bad. And then what happens is that things start to break down. We start with one. If a leader doesn't understand why silos exist and why they're important to their organization, then they will tear them down. Whenever there's a problem, they'll jump to a solution. It's a knee-jerk reaction. I'm gonna just move some people around. What happens when you move people around in an organization? It's disruptive. And you spend months trying to rebuild this layer of belonging. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I must have love and belonging for me to be able to get to the next level. I can't get anywhere close to self-actualization if I don't feel like I belong. And then a leader is just going to come and rip that out and tear it out of their organization so that you are forced to now rebuild your network. That's what you're causing. And then when a leader understands that, they're like, okay, all right, John, what am I supposed to do? What else am I supposed to look at? And that's where you start to look at things like, first, your strategy. And you said it. Is your strategy fully aligned? Is everybody, every silo in your organization focused on that one strategy? Or is every silo focused on their own strategy? You know that happens because we get these agendas in our head and I'm focused on doing this. So you have to make sure your strategies are aligned. You need to look at the organizational structure. Yes, you might need to adjust things because you might not be organized properly, but this is a form meets function activity, not a people placement activity. When we organize around people, we're making mistakes. You organize around the operating model, the processes. What do you deliver and how do you deliver it to the customer? And that's how you organize. And if somebody doesn't fit and they can't be made to fit, it's time to get them off the bus, right?
I have a perfect example where there is a disconnect. It's a simple operations. I have this particular client and, you know, operations. Sales calls them. We need it out by 3. You have to break down the line, insert another product, get it out the door because we want to please and service the customer. But what happens when we don't complete a record that we should have? Because people are screaming to get the product out because we're disrupting what the metrics are for the operations. We need to keep sure we have these records after every single job. But there was a higher level priority. We got the product out, high five, and then we get an audit finding for not having a complete record. So there's like an example of misalignment of priorities, a simple communication between the different silos to say, we'll help you as much as you can, but do not come to us for any rush orders until 10 o'clock in the morning. So we can do the record keeping and the work we need to do within the operations. Comes down to communications and aligning on the strategy and those priorities.
You know, when I worked in USAA, we would go out, we would visit with some of our suppliers. My first job was to work in document management, enterprise document management. We were building it. Didn't really exist. We went out to R.R. Donnelly and we were watching their processes. And this guy was working on this process and he was, you know, chugging away, printing some documents. And then they stopped the line and he did all of this stuff that he had not done with any of the other processes, like these extra steps and everything. And then he ran it and I went up to him and I asked, why did you do all that stuff? He says, this is a USAA process. It's different. So sometimes a business has to think about who the customer is at every level and what are we trying to accomplish. It's okay to have rush orders for a specific style of customer because we segmentate all of our customers and decide, this is really important and we must get it in front. But if you don't think about that ahead of time, then what it is just a disruption. And now it's sales is really just trying to placate a customer and they want to push something through the process, which totally messes up operations and supply chain and delivery. But nobody talking causes problems. So you can see how the process in a siloed organization can be such a problem where we're just throwing stuff over the wall, lack of communication. Even technology can cause silos. You and I, we deal with this. How many systems do you work on? How many email systems, messaging systems do you have to deal with to stay on top of? Those are all silos because they don't all aggregate to one area. You might have, at any time, you might have 5, 10, 20 windows open. Feels like I got LinkedIn over here and I got Facebook. Those technology silos, when you get busier and busier, they cause a lot of problems. The more systems that you have to actually work within to get something done makes it more and more difficult as you increase the complexity and the number of customers and the amount of revenue pumping through your machine.
So I am so grateful that I know you because you and I come almost from the same cloth. We could swap stories about operations that run well, that are highly aligned, and those that just don't get it. They may be short-sighted and get their budget numbers this quarter, but then they don't the next quarter. And then we change out the people. We change out the leaders. We throw stuff at it only to repeat that cycle over and over again. So I am grateful that there are people like you that help businesses with their strategies and continuous improvement.
Makes it exciting.
It is. But last question before we close, because I want people to know who John is and who might need you. So if you could say something to somebody right now, if they're out there listening to this, what would it be? Because then maybe they should be connecting with you if they are at a particular pain point or an opportunity. Who should contact you?
So I, you know, one of the things I said in the very beginning, we were talking about thought leadership, is that I come on podcasts because I want to share messages. I want to create discussion. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm also active on Twitter and I'm active on Facebook, but those aren't as active sites for what we do. If you want to talk about this stuff, get hold of me through LinkedIn and let's talk about it. I talk about this stuff every day, whether it's in the specifically in the topics of business and success. I'm not selling anything. What I want to do is I want to learn along with everybody else. If they go to my website, which is www.crosscutter.com, crosscutr.com, and they go to my publications page, they'll find all kinds of articles and materials that are free for them to download and read. This podcast will be under the podcast sections when it's published. So everything that I'm doing is to share, is to give back, and to create communication and to build learning, because that's what businesses really need.
John, I am grateful for this interview. I've learned a lot from you, specifically this paradigm shift on the silo mentality. We have to understand the value of silos and how to optimize how they perform and interact with each other. So I am definitely inspired and enlightened. I just want to say thank you, John. You've been an amazing guest, and I do wish you continued success, John.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO Podcast. My new book, The CEO's Compass, will change the way you think about leadership, navigate rapid transformation, and elevate the leaders of tomorrow. If you're feeling off track, The CEO's Compass assessment will guide you to peace of mind in days, not months. You can learn more about The CEO's Compass by visiting my website at dropinceo.com. Now go out and lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.